Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Gary Grandling.
I'm Jenny Brenta.
And I'm Connor Orr.
Guys, we're doing something a little bit different today. We are doing the first of many, or perhaps of no more, stat game show show.
Ooh.
So, to explain it, because again, it's the first, so we have to say what we're going to do here. We have each identified three stats that we find illuminating, interesting, maybe a little bit mind-blowing in some way, and also stats that have maybe a little bit of a deeper meaning, maybe something of a theme to them, maybe something that'll teach us about ourselves, and we are going to quiz each other on them, see if we can identify the player and or the team involved in each stat.
The impetus for this was the Bills-Patriots game on Monday night, in which the Patriots only threw three passes, and it got us thinking, specifically it got producer Shelby thinking, so thank you for the idea, Shelby, about weird stats that we could pick and quiz each other on that might say something about the season or the sport or a franchise in some cases. Looking at Connor's questions right now.
Also, highlights the skills of Jenny Frentis, who I believe is a Quiz Bowl champion. Am I incorrect in saying that in a certain lifetime?
I mean, I participated in Quiz Bowl.
I don't remember a record. But you were good at Quiz Bowl.
Yeah, we competed. We had like Knowledge Masters, and then there was like the NAQT Quiz Bowl. We also had Ocean Bowl, which was like all oceanography questions, and Science Bowl, which was all science questions. So yes, I did a lot of trivia competitions in high school.
I'm now concerned because some of my questions have a distinct marine feel, so I'm worried that you're just going to breeze through them and dominate. So that was,
All right.
I'm just kidding.
I was like, I thought I read over your questions, but maybe there were some that you have hidden. I'm not sure. Maybe they're related to the dolphins.
I didn't do the prompt. It's all about sharks.
Well, no, I hope you just found the metrics on like what player can hold their breath underwater for the longest.
There you go.
You have to pay for that on Football Outsiders, so I didn't get that one.
So listen, this is how it's going to work. Each of us have three questions that we are going to pose to the other two people on the show. The way you accumulate points is by getting wrong guesses from your friends, from your colleagues. You're trying to stump them. So we will go up to five guesses per question. So a perfect score in this would be 15. If you're a historian for this game, 15 is what you really want to track here. See if anyone can make a run at that. But I don't know, guys. We're going to throw these out. We are going to impart life lessons along the way. And I think we're ready to get started with my three.
Great.
Let's do it.
All right. Question one. This is offense. I did offense, defense, special teams. This is offense. Who leads the NFL in completion percentage on downfield throws? Downfield defined in this case by Pro Football Reference, which is 15 air yards or more. Who leads the league this season in completion percentage on downfield throws?
Okay, I have a question. Is there a minimum here? Like if one receiver or running back threw one long pass and completed it?
That would be the jerkiest question ever.
It really would be.
It is.
I mean, considering the source,
Yeah, Connor, we're on guard.
We've been hurt before.
Mm-hmm.
The answer was Tommy Townsend, Chiefs punter, one for one. No, it is quarterbacks. It is minimum two of these attempts per game.
Okay, great.
So
great.
It's all quarterbacks on the list because no non-quarterbacks, but it's also not like Geno Smith, who's like, 7 for 8.
Okay, got it. My immediate guess would be Kyler Murray, just because he has a high completion percentage overall this year. I think he's over 70%, and he throws downfield a decent amount.
So I'm glad you asked the first question, Jenny, because if he had not said yes, the obvious answer would have been Jacoby Brissett, who is Gary's favorite player in the NFL. And I thought he had sort of crafted this whole thing as just giant ruse in order to elevate the status of Jacoby Brissett. But I'm torn between Kirk Cousins and Mac Jones. I think that either one of those could be the answer to that question. I'm going to go first with my weird gut on this and say Mac Jones.
All right. Are you guys together doing Mac Jones?
That's true. We should go with Kyler Murray first. I feel good about that.
The answer is Kyler Murray.
Oh!
My perfect game is already gone. And by the way, Jacoby Brissett is fifth. Just so you
is
know.
He really?
Oh, man.
So I've mentioned this stat before in writings and whatnot, but downfield throwing accuracy is something that people really get worked up about, because it's, you know, whether it's whatever, you want to dunk on Ben Roethlisberger, which we all do, but you know, last year Tom Brady you know, at one point had missed 20 consecutive such passes, I think beyond 20 yards. And it's just, it's another one of those stats. You don't throw it downfield that often. You don't really have this many throws. So it's something that people draw these broad conclusions about and say, like, oh, this guy's 35% on downfield throws. He can't throw downfield. Like, oh, that's a huge problem with his offense. When in fact, it just, you know, whatever. You do it two or three times a week. And well, the guys at the top do it like seven or eight times a week. But, you know, there's just not that many to actually complete. But it's interesting to me that Kyler Murray is the leader this year, because if you go back over his first two seasons, kind of, you know, along the same lines of what I was just talking about, he was really bad in this category. He was way down there. He was, I want to bring up the exact numbers here. So this year he is leading the league at 61.2%, which is historically high. That is, you know, Drew Brees is the all-time leader at 61.1% for single season. So right now, Kyler Murray is on pace to be the greatest downfield passer of all time. Last year, he was 26th out of 38 qualifying quarterbacks at 38.7%. And in 2019, he was 19th at 42.3%. That's 19th out of 34 qualifiers. And very sadly, Dwayne Haskins seems to be last place in 2019 and 2020. That's a bummer. But yeah, that's kind of my that's the life lesson I want to impart to everyone. Everyone gets really obsessed with downfield passing numbers and drawing these sort of big, broad conclusions, but it is a relatively small sample size, and you know, sometimes you get them in bunches, sometimes you don't, but it's a misleading stat overall, I believe.
This is funny. When I was covering the Jets as a beat reporter, and it was like 2012, and we had gotten into the real deep thick of the weeds in terms of, like, this is a bad team, and they were willing to do a story basically on anything that didn't have to relate to Tim Tebow not wanting to be there, or, you know, the fact that they were starting Greg McElroy at quarterback. And so I remember, like, pitching all these ideas to try to, like, get something, and the one that, like, resonated was, like, it's really hard to complete a downfield pass in the NFL, because the Jets were, like, last in downfield passing, and they were all like, yes, let's offer some excuses for that, you know? And I remember, like, talking to the receivers coach and watching him draw up the field and saying, like, here's how we design a lot of these downfield passes, and, like, you have no idea how many things can possibly go wrong on a given downfield passing play. And that's so it doesn't have really anything to do with, it has a lot to do with the quarterback, but also a lot not to do with the quarterback. And so I think it's one of those things that it's interesting that it's a quarterback specific stat, even though it has so much to do with a lot of other, you know, determining factors. And it, to your point, it speaks to both Kyler Murray and the quality of receiver that were brought in, and they were able to acclimate in, like, a sight adjustment offense, which I can't imagine is very easy either.
Okay, so here we are. I'm getting shut out so far. Question number two, this is a team question. There are 32 teams in the NFL. I just want to put that out as a reminder. this season, what defense has forced the most three and outs in the NFL? And this team actually happens to lead in both total three and outs forced and also highest percentage of drives that end in a three and out forced.
Like, the first thing I'm doing here is running down a list of Gary's favorite people. Like, is there a way that he's trying to, like, sneak in, you know, Jacoby Brissett doesn't play defense, but Yannick Ngakoue plays defense. Well, he's not playing right now. So there's no way this can be Yannick Ngakoue related. In a strange way, like, I fear it's, like, anti-Connor also. Like, the Raiders could be the answer to this question. But I'm going to go, I don't know. What do you think, Jenny?
I'm
thinking Saints for some reason.
Okay. I wouldn't be stunned if it was the Patriots.
That's true. Climbing towards that number one defense. Well, we're on a hot streak here. You're the Quiz Bowl champion. Why don't we offer up Patriots as our first response?
The Patriots is incorrect.
Oh.
They are 14th. This is a bend don't break defense. Their strategy is you run it 46 times and knowing that they will stop their opponent inside the 10. And that's the genius of the whole thing. No, it's not the Patriots.
Here's a sneaky idea, Jenny. What about, like, either one of the best defenses, like, oh, I have an idea. Okay. What about either one of the very good defense, because this is in Gary's stable of guys. I am venturing the Colts, because Gary loves the Colts. Gary loves Matt Eberflus, and the Colts play in one of the worst divisions in
the NFL.
I think that could be the secret there.
Yeah. And I would like to apologize for my Patriots answer. I got in my head that they have the best scoring defense right now. So I was like, oh, yeah, but Gary's right. You know, they do let up a lot of yards. So that seems like a good answer, Connor. I like the Colts' direction here. I mean, with Gary, there's always some kind of, you know,
hidden agenda.
Totally, yes.
The Colts is correct.
Yes. Good job, Connor.
25.2%. And I want to give, Connor, as if you could possibly be happier at this moment, the Raiders are actually last. They are 13.1% on the season on three and outs. Look, if you were to hit the reset button on the season right now, and everyone started at 0-0, and we just move forward with the season, the Colts are a top five team in the NFL. They just had this absurd run of the worst possible luck in the red zone early in the year. And this is a team that should profile as a good red zone offense because of their offensive line and because of Jonathan Taylor. And it was just going completely haywire. They were way down there. They've actually moved up a little bit in red zone efficiency here. They're up to 23rd in the league. But they were, for a while, I mean, they were last by a fairly significant margin because they kept on throwing shovel pass interceptions every time they got down near the goal line. But, boy, the Colts are really good, and if they get to the postseason, it is not a team I would want to see. And quite frankly, I mean, you could go back a year ago. They went up to Buffalo in the wild card round. They outplayed the Bills. They just had some, you know, again, red zone issues. They had some, you know, fourth and short conversions they didn't get. This is a really good team. This is a Super Bowl caliber team, and it's led by this defense.
Here, so if you went back to my season bold prediction, minus the fact that I predicted that somebody was going to get food poisoning,
which was just only a little bit off. It happened in the AFC South, Connor. Give yourself some credit. The Oracle vibes are in the right vicinity.
Yeah. But the crux of the non-food poisoning related part of the bold prediction was that they were going to have a crap beginning of the year marred by all these horrible luck things and then turn around and go on a winning streak. So I feel pretty good about this. I like almost to the point where I don't know if anything is going to knock the Patriots off of Team of the Podcast this year just because Jenny was flying high with that bold prediction, and now they're number one in the AFC, and I feel like that is sort of a banner that we can wave very proudly. But I would put Colts up there. Colts are like second. I think Colts are second for team in the podcast right now.
All right, question number three. This is another team question. So again, I remind you, 32 teams in the NFL. Which team leads the NFL in opponent field goal percentage? And when I say leads, I mean their opponents have the lowest field goal percentage. So if you are someone who believes incorrectly that that teams that literally don't block every field goal attempt somehow affect field goal kickers for the other team, this is your team. This is the team that you should be really into.
Connor, is there a reason that Gary keeps repeating that there are 32 teams in the NFL? Like, is there some...
Maybe someone's going to guess the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I don't know.
Like, there's going to be a CFL stat in here or...
I'm just kind of just trying to make sense of it all. So
it's the Los Angeles Extreme.
All right. Well, I'm a little bit nervous that we're at risk of running up 5 points here, Connor, because this is a tough one.
So, Jenny, I have a trio of guesses. One of them, which I think is kind of right down Gary's alley, which could be sort of the secret answer to this question. But another two on a more common sense front, one of which relating to one of the great stories of Jenny's early newspaper career as a Giants beat reporter at the Star-Ledger. You know that MetLife and in New York in general, that basically that stadium is a wind tunnel. It's a horrendous place to kick and punt. And so I think that the Giants could be one of those teams, you know, just bad team off the radar. And all of a sudden, oh, yeah, well, that's a weird thing that happens to them. I would throw the Bills in there similarly, just based on what we saw on Monday night. And my third guess here, just because it's total Gary, is they play outside, they play in a crap field, Soldier Field, the Bears, and, you know, the Bears, it would just be kind of a funny juxtaposition given how horrible their kicking situation has been in the past.
Okay, those are good guesses. Yeah, so we want something outdoors with a bad weather situation, most likely. I mean, of course, there could be fluky things, but... or the team could be really good at blocking kicks. But, you know, New England would be another one because their stadium also has that weird wind situation coming in just one of the end zones. So why don't you pick first this time, Connor?
Okay. I'm going to pick the Bears.
It is not the Bears. The Bears, weirdly, look, I think your logic was right on. Bears are the fourth highest opponent field goal percentage this year, including opponents are 7-for-7 from 50-plus against the Bears this year. 91.7 wow. Overall on all field goals. So the Bears have been fairly unlucky in that sense.
Okay. Now, I am thinking about that weird Packers-Bengals game, Connor, where there were a ton of missed kicks. And a game like that could really have an impact on, you know, with a small sample size, one might say. That's one thought I had.
Ooh, yeah, why don't we do that? Because you're right, like, we've seen, you know, in just discussing some stats pre-show, we've seen how one bad game can completely explode, like, a category like this. And Gary is a fan of sample size, so that would also fit in very well there.
Okay, so should I go with the Packers then?
Yes.
Okay, that's my guess, Gary.
Or would it be the, Bengals?
Well, right? They both missed a bunch.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Could be either.
Yeah.
This is difficult. You know what, though? The Bengals had that game where they won because the Vikings missed the kick at the end. So here's a couple that we know. There's a bunch of misses against them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have heard weird things about the wind at Paul Brown Stadium, Connor. What do you think?
I think
Bengals?
It's a no-brainer.
All right. We're going with the Bengals.
I feel so seen here, but it is actually not the Bengals.
Oh,
the Bengals
my
are,
gosh! That was Bengals, such a good guess.
Yep. The Bengals are way up, 76%. That is third lowest in the league. And that would normally be, I mean, that could lead the league some years. But yeah, it's not the Bengals.
Okay. Connor. Mm.
I'm up to 3 points here, by the way.
Well, no, wait a second. Just two. Packers wasn't officially submitted.
No, overall. 3 points.
Oh, overall. Yeah. Okay, okay.
I'm trying to make myself feel better.
You know.
All the points I've gotten in every game in my life are pretty good. But yeah, three overall, two on this round.
I feel like if Gary was basing the answer off of an elite special teams coordinator, that would kind of be unfairly crossing over into my category and sort of my whole thing. So I'm not going to go with the Cowboys, the Chiefs, the Colts, any of those teams with sort of your hot candidate special teams coordinators. Has the guest been mentioned aloud already? Are we allowed to 21 questions this or no?
I think it's been mentioned.
Okay.
how is that for an answer?
So I will go Patriots in tribute of Jenny.
Yeah, Jenny, you're okay with that?
Sure.
It's the Patriots.
Nice! Good job, Connor.
Yeah, the Patriots, so opposing kickers, 60% against the Patriots this year. That includes 0 for 5 from 50 and beyond, but also 5 for 8 from 30 to 39. Now, of course, that included a miss on Monday night in the wind that was maybe more of a coin flip kick at that point. But 60% would be the lowest opponent field goal percentage for any team since 2002, which was also the Patriots, by the way, 58.8%. So it's been, again, look, you don't necessarily chalk everything up to luck. Maybe there's something else going on here. The stadium obviously
fishy
plays a role in this, but yeah, they've been pretty fortunate with the way opposing kickers are missing kicks here. I did want to mention just super weird stat, because I was also looking at PATs a little bit, and opponents are only 17 for 20 on PATs against the Patriots, which is fairly low. But the Seahawks are leading the league in opponent PAT percentage, and they led the league last year. So whatever the Seahawks are doing to defend point after touchdown kicks, that's they got a formula there. They've got a secret out there in Seattle that someone has to bottle and sell to another team.
Okay, so there is a dominant win pattern in Gillette Stadium. We learned about this when we did a story on Belichick's penchant for left-footed punters, because that ended up being the prevailing theory from one of his former left-footed punters, Zoltan Mesko, was that the win pattern was a reason why Belichick had favored the lefties with the Patriots. And the wind apparently comes in through the open end of the stadium and blows across the field on a diagonal from right to left. So if you're facing the open end and the goalposts are at 12 o'clock, that means the wind blows toward 8 o'clock. So that is, it's hard to kick into the wind, as we saw with the Patriots-Bills game. We're just really looping everything together here. So I guess that could be one reason. I would be interested if, you know, most of the misses were at Gillette or not, and if they were that direction or not. I mean, there's a lot of analysis we can do, but we know at least one of the misses was on the road.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of know exactly what is going on here with the Gillette Stadium wind patterns. So 15 for 25 is the number here for all kicks. That's 15 for 20 inside 50, which is still very low. But four of those five misses were at Gillette. And then obviously the other one was Tyler Bass on Monday night up in Buffalo.
Gary, I bet you weren't prepared to get dunked on in terms of like Foxborough wind directional knowledge as hard as you got dunked on from what was just a dominant performance by Jenny and Connor, mostly Jenny, in this round.
I had no idea that was coming. I should have remembered the Zoltan Mesko story and the left-footed punter story, and mm-hmm. I would have known better than to do it. But this went horribly for me. I have 3 points here at the end of round one.
I mean, I actually thought Patriots wasn't going to be it, because I was like, there's no way that Gary would pick the Patriots because of this detailed research. Like, Gary, you and I were like in on this left-footed punter research. We discussed the prevailing wind pattern at Gillette Stadium.
I was just nodding my head. I couldn't digest a single thing that was going on with it.
All right. It's weird to have, like, formed such, like, a survivor alliance with Jenny there, and then now to be on the opposing side, which is truly sort of the twist of this game show.
Yes!
Which I love, you know?
It's a great format.
Stab you right in the back.
All right. I don't know if mine are going to be hard or easy now. This is going to be, you know, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. My first question is, this quarterback leads the NFL in completion percentage on play action throws.
Okay. So, obviously, guys who I'm new to this, Jenny. I'm sorry. Obviously, guys who play quarterback.
That's a good place to start.
I would narrow it down. Yeah, I don't think I think I'm giving too much away there.
So I'm wondering if could there be something weird, like it's Roethlisberger who throws three play action passes every two seasons. But I think more likely we're looking at, I mean, if it was coming from a neutral third party, I'd sort of throw Mac Jones out there. Coming from Connor, I wonder if Derek Carr is an answer.
Okay, yeah, we do need to recalibrate, because in the Gary section of the show, we knew that there was going to be a hidden agenda with Connor. Like, yep. Maybe some of these are earnest questions. Hard to know. I was also going to say Mac Jones. My only hesitation is that I've offered a Patriots related answer for like two of the first three questions, and I didn't want to do it for a third, but I do think Mac Jones is a pretty good guess here.
And we did these independently. It wasn't like a thing where it was like, let's all do Mac Jones questions.
Right, true.
Or Patriots questions. Should we go? I think we should go Mac Jones.
Yeah, we're both in alignment here, Gary.
Connor, Mac Jones.
That is correct.
Yes.
Jenny calling me earnest was like the nicest thing that anyone's ever said about me. I was very like flattered. I was thrilled,
right?
About that.
Yeah, I think you're often earnest, yeah. Connor.
Most of the time, I have a hidden agenda, so it felt very good to.
I was going to say you were cast as my foil, and therefore you have to feel good about that.
Yeah, no, everything was great about that. I thought it was just funny to put that here because he didn't throw the ball at all on Monday against the Bills, and I think regardless of what you think of the game plan, I think the overarching point that I wanted to make here was that I don't think that it illustrates at all a lack of faith in Mac Jones, like what they were doing on Monday night against the Bills. I just think it was one of these things where it happened to work out the way that they wanted to. They were gaining 4 yards a carry, and they were keeping the ball away from Josh Allen. So I think that Mac Jones is still in line for Rookie of the Year. I don't think anything changes there, and I just thought it was a really interesting stat, because to be among the best play action throwers, you are among the best throwers, period, because of the proliferation of play action in the NFL. It's become commonplace. I mean, the studies have shown that it's smart to do it on every down, regardless of whether you run the ball 5 times or 100 times a game, because you're at least forcing the defense to go through the motions of respecting the run. So a lot of teams are doing play action, and I think that means that Mac Jones is not just a quarterback who happens to operate a run-first system, but a quarterback who is actually having a pretty good year.
Studies have shown both that it's good to do play action and the booster is effective against Omicron. So, you know, just was funny how you said that, Connor. Studies have shown.
There's the life
both
lesson.
True. Both true. Okay, so I have 0 points, which is discouraging, and I hope that I can begin to build on this a little bit. I would like to beat Gary. So this one, I believe one will be sort of obvious. The other one I think will be difficult. So and you have to get both. Only two quarterbacks in NFL history, both of whom are still active, have thrown 4 or more interceptions in a game and logged a win. Who are they?
All right. So the obvious one is Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm. So let's get that out of the way. That doesn't count as a guess. The real meat of this question here is going to be, who is the second quarterback to have thrown 4+ interceptions and won a game? He is an active quarterback in the NFL.
All
with
right.
a functioning arm.
Okay.
And is collecting a salary.
Hmm.
All right. So you know, Roethlisberger, again, guy who's been around for a long time, probably played in some messy December, January games. Boy, who else might be up there? Because you, right, I mean, you want someone who's been around for a while and also is complemented by a defense that takes the ball away, because you probably didn't win many games where you were significantly down on the turnover margin. And if I remember correctly, the Hugh Jackson Browns had that stat where it was like they were something ridiculous. They were like 0-3 one season where they had won the turnover margin by 3+.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Gary, it's got to be somebody who played on a team with a strong defense in order for them to get a win despite the 4-interception performance. So Roethlisberger is a pretty good guess in that regard.
I mean, the other guy, obviously Jameis Winston, threw a lot of interceptions.
Right.
And was in a lot of weird games.
But might not have come out with a win.
My first instinct was Ben Roethlisberger.
I think we should go with Roethlisberger.
Incorrect.
Okay.
Gary, we're going to get 5 on this one, aren't we?
The other thing that's kind of throwing me off here is active in the NFL, you know, could be a lot of things. Could be someone's number 3 quarterback at this point.
Right, exactly. Or the way Connor spoke of it made it sound like this isn't like a Tom Brady or a Roethlisberger. Like,
It is a person who, I'm not going to douse this in legalese. This is a person who you would have considered, like, if you looked at the last decade of the NFL, you would say that person has started quite a few games in the NFL. Like, you would say that person is a person who started a great deal of games.
Okay. That's helpful to know.
I do say that a lot. so that, I mean, that opens up kind of the Case Keenum, a Cam Newton type.
Mm-hmm. Both have been on teams with good defenses
in past decades. So we're talking about Andy Dalton, maybe. Was on some really good Bengals teams.
Also good defenses. Yeah.
Played the Browns a lot. I think Andy Dalton has risen to my top guess.
You seem to have an air of confidence, Gary, so I'm gonna defer to you.
I mean, I need this. I need to play defense now. So yeah. Yep. It's 2nd and 14, but I'm handing it to Ramondre Stevenson and saying Andy Dalton.
God, my heart sank when you brought that up because the answer is Andy Dalton. That's
wow.
Very good.
Yes.
Wow,
very
that
well
was
done.
Good, Gary. Do we very know well. What year that was?
2013.
Okay.
So, yes.
And who was it against?
Well, that would be a question.
Too much information to have. Yeah. We're asking for too much here.
So I thought it would be fun. Andy Dalton is a quarterback in the NFL right now and is starting, even though he probably shouldn't be. And so I thought that would be a fun question. And I'm really upset that you got this.
That was pretty impressive. I mean, now looking back, the way that Connor described the person fits Andy Dalton to a T. But Andy Dalton didn't even cross my mind.
It's funny. It's like it's probably what most people would say, you know, like, you know, Jeopardy or whatever. If the question was Andy Dalton, it would just be like, who's a quarterback that played in the NFL? You know, like who's just a guy who's been around, you know. And that would be that.
I will say, since you gave us hints, Connor, I will give you a tiebreaker. Should we end up tying here?
Okay, good. And sorry, that was Andy Dalton, against the Ravens in 2013.
Ah, oh, but they won. Interesting.
Yes. So there
you
go.
So we're just, it's AFC North little category there.
Yes.
Actually, exclusively Bengals Ravens category.
Yes. And the last one, I don't know why I included this, but I came across it in a fun little research note, and I just thought it was interesting if, I don't know. So here we go. The Jets in franchise history have never beaten this opponent, ever. It is the most wins without a loss in any all-time series among current NFL franchises. Who is the opponent? And bonus, why are the Jets so terrible?
Connor, I saw this last week.
Oh,
I did too.
So I feel a little bit bad, but...
Can you just pretend? No, I'm kidding.
The answers are the Eagles and Woody Johnson.
Oh, I got negative points. You got the bonus. Oh, man. Rough stuff.
We'll give you half a point.
You That's leave wild, with half though, right? a point. How could the Jets have never beaten the Eagles?
That it is super wild. Weird.
Yeah.
It's super weird because you think it would just be like, well, the Texans, because that's a newish franchise that maybe they don't play that often.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But, yeah, so, gosh, what a horrible showing by me. 1 point, currently in last place. We initially thought that this was Gary's game to lose. It turns out this is like... Sunday at the Augusta pin placement right now. Like, this is impossible to score. And I don't know. I'm leaving it up to my esteemed colleague, Jenny, to blow us away here.
All right. Really excited for mine. I think I've got one really hard one, one really easy one, and one that's in the middle. So let's see where we land on this. Which player hit the fastest max speed on a play this year? Bonus points if you can name both the player and the play itself.
Oh.
This is my hard one.
Okay. It's got to be one, like, because I have a qualm with, like, the Amazon Web Service stats when they're like, oh, this person reached X miles an hour. It's because, like, scientifically, you are able to reach a peak. You know what I mean? Like, most NFL plays, like, you're in a 5-yard box, right? And you're moving, so you're never able to reach like a peak speed. So it has to be like a very long fumble return, interception return, something where the person was able to reach like peak speed. That would be my like I don't think it's like a Tyreek Hill. I think it could be like anybody, because when you get an athlete at peak speed, it's going to be faster than even your fastest guy at a middle speed.
Well, yeah, that was the thing. I can't remember which.
Like Daniel
it was.
Jones. Remember Daniel yes. Jones was number one like 2 years ago because he had that play where he fell on himself.
Yes, but there was a punter a couple years ago that like he clocked like a really high peak speed on a fake punt because he just ran in a straight line for 50 yards or something like that. So it's so you know I. Vikings kick returner Kane Wangu is one that sticks out as a possibility. But if Jenny wants specific play, that suggests that, you know, he's had two kickoff return touchdowns, and I don't think she would differentiate between the two. Connor, who do you have for a long interception return this year?
Well, there's that. This was the Jamal Agnew play against the Cardinals.
Right.
That was like 109 yards, so that's plenty of time to reach your peak speed and then to drop.
It is, but you know what I worry about on that play? There was a little bit of lateral movement and weaving on the way.
Urban Meyer's also a bad coach, which is
good
a bad
memory.
Too, remember. Yeah.
Urban Meyer probably, encouraged him to not run fast.
Yeah, because that's what bad coaches do.
Slow down. Yeah. Slow down. You're scoring too fast. but yeah, you know, like, it's like that movement, it drains a certain amount of what your peak speed would be, as opposed
True.
To, I think we're looking for a guy who, you know, maybe a nice back pedal, makes the interception, and then... go.
So in that case, would you go what's his name from the Cowboys, because he's had so many pick sixes this year?
Diggs.
Yeah. That's a lot of chances at open field.
Yep.
And a lot of times he is like, he's boom or bust, right? So he's breaking on the ball. So you're already like in a good spot to start carrying the ball. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's almost like you're taking a handoff in a lot of ways, only faster.
Okay.
With fewer people in front of you.
His most prominent return was against the Patriots. So I think that we might have some Patriots pop up again. I think I like your style, Connor Orr. And I think I want to go with you and say Trevon Diggs, and the play was the pick six of Mac Jones.
That is not correct.
Oh boy.
Really enjoyed the reasonings to get there, though.
Okay.
You know what? It's got to be some doofy, you know, like a lineman. Like, did we have any, like, you know?
She's toying with us. I think we need to make that clear.
Yeah. A lot of head games being played.
You think I'm channeling my Gary Gramling? I'm kind of offended. Jeez.
This whole show is just an hour-long insult.
to you, the listener.
Yes. Because I was going to say, as we were going through Diggs, I was like, if it wasn't Diggs, I remember Denzel Ward had that pick six against the Bengals, the 99-yard pick six. Mm. But her reaction suggests to me that that is not the correct answer. So there was Derrick Henry had the long touchdown against the Bills. I don't know how prominent that play is, so I don't know how I feel about that.
It could be Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry on Monday night against the Bills.
It's still moderately surprising, you know. It's still that's a good one. Boy, I'll tell you what. Real credit to me here. the temptation to cheat is so good because you can't see my hand like on the mouse keyboard, but I'm gonna do this one honestly, for once in my life. I'm gonna do this and not cheat in any way, shape, or form. Boy, it's really bothering me. Derrick Henry, that's a good one. Like, I remember one year it was like Aaron Donald. You know what I mean? Like it could be one of those. You know? Like, wasn't there a? It's the NFL, so the answer is like, yeah, Connor. But it's like, wasn't there like a six? I was just gonna say, wasn't there like a 6'6", 260-pound guy who scored a long touchdown? It's like, yeah, probably. you know, it's there's a lot of them in the NFL. Jeez, why don't we offer a Derrick Henry, and then we'll sort of try to gauge Jenny's response in terms of a hot cold. You know,
yeah. And just remember, my top scorer is on the line here, so
yeah.
We only have so much to play with.
Concerned about that.
we'll go Derrick Henry, the Monday night game against the Bills.
It's a good guess. It's not right, but that is fifth on the list.
Mm.
He reached a peak speed of 21.8 miles per hour. I have to say, I'm sorry, because the questions that you guys picked can easily be reasoned through, and your reasoning has been very good on this, I will say. Like, you're getting close because of your good reasoning, but it's also a little bit random, so I feel like I failed the whole concept of the show. And so if I do end up winning because of this really strange outlier, then I actually feel a little bit bad. So
no shame in putting an asterisk next to this one. Almost like a Taysom Hill. Like, did somebody, like a one of the sort of lankier quarterbacks on like a zone read, like I'm almost saying like a Daniel Jones redo, where like you don't expect it and then all of a sudden they get out into the open field, like maybe like a Justin Herbert had a really long one,
long strider. Justin Herbert's good. He had a couple long runs against the Steelers.
That's why a lot of people call him the giraffe. like Justin Herbert, like the opposite of Jimmy Garoppolo is kind of what we're looking for. Tom Brady had a nice one earlier this year. I doubt he I doubt it logged on the odometer, Justin Fields hasn't had a ton of explosive plays. Like Lamar Jackson hasn't really had like a big Lamar Jackson run this year.
And this is Jenny. We're talking ball carriers, right? This is not some weird tracking thing where
it's not a weird one. Okay. No, yeah. And I think your reasoning for long plays is spot on.
Long-legged people.
Yes, I would say that too. Tall, long play.
Mike Glennon.
I really apologize, guys. I feel like I tanked the show here. I mean, I just went to the Next Gen stats and was looking for things that I thought were interesting, and this one is just very hard to guess, I think.
A tall, long-legged man with a story to tell.
I'm going to narrow it down a little bit. It is not a defensive play, but second on the list is a defensive play. So Pat Surtain has the second one on the list, and the difference is 0.02 miles per hour, his 70-yard interception touchdown in week 12. So you guys you're really on the money here in terms of it being a long play, and this one is an offensive play, I will say.
John Taylor. What do you think about, like, well, not tall. I mean, tall in the general sense that he would tower over all of us. But
taller than us, yes.
Taller
yes.
than us, relatively tall. A tall man who's just slightly faster than Patrick Surtain.
I mean, Trevor Lawrence?
Hmm.
Did they get him on a keeper where he took off? They just haven't had any highlights this year.
And this is Urban's in with the analytically minded Tony Khan. You say, look, I did this, a Next Gen stats. I get to stay for another year. Did he have a long? He might have had a long run this year. A tall leads me to believe quarterback, right? Ball carrier. Yeah. Tall ball carrier. So not Kyler Murray.
Not Russ.
So our kind of finalists there: Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence,
Tannehill,
Matt Ryan, I don't know. You want to pick one out of that?
Cam? How long was Cam's longest touchdown?
I don't know if it was long enough.
That first one against the Cardinals.
It was like 20 yards, wasn't it?
Yeah. Probably not long enough then. Okay. But it was a prominent play.
Let's go Trevor Lawrence. I had a weird feeling in my gut when you said that. Let's go Trevor Lawrence.
It's not Trevor Lawrence.
So what do we got? Two guesses left?
It's a receiver.
Okay.
Tall.
And I just want to point out that Jonathan Taylor is actually not taller than I am. He's 5'10", and I am 5'11". So.
Take that, Jonathan Taylor.
But Jonathan Taylor is third and fourth on the list. Okay. And Derrick Henry is fifth on the list. So you guys are in the... I mean, all of your guesses have been extremely close.
Entire top five.
Do you know, I just pulled up Trevor Lawrence's box score stats here, and our guess was terrible because his longest run this year is 12 yards.
yeah, but that one 12-yard run.
Oh, yeah, really hit, hit top speed.
And again, he ran 12, and Urban Meyer was like, get down! You're too close to scoring.
I think that you guys should look for a long... I mean, I said it was a receiver, so a long reception.
Two thoughts. Debo Samuel has had some home run plays this year. I don't know if he would be... Well, he's like 6'3", 6'2". Justin Jefferson.
DK Metcalf had the Monday night touchdown from Geno Smith. Geno Smith is involved.
Yes. Tie back to the 2011 Jets. I don't know. You pick a receiver. I'll pick a receiver, and we'll go lightning on this.
I'm gonna go DK Metcalf in that Monday night game.
He's 20th on the list.
Oh wow! Oh man!
Still on the top 20, Gary. I thought that was pretty good.
Oh, 20 sounds terrible.
Oh, I don't know.
I will go with Debo Samuel.
Nope. The answer is Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
Oh, that was my alternate. 75-yard
reception touchdown against the Vikings.
Yes. Yep. MVS.
I mean, I thought it was like still a prominent play, but like
it was a very prominent play.
It's not a player we talk about a lot. So like you wouldn't, you know, I didn't put that much thought into it. I just thought it was a fun stat. It was very hard.
That was that game tying touchdown. That was a big touchdown. That week.
I unknowingly rigged the game. I'm sorry, guys.
That was your Michael Badgley moment, right?
That
there.
That was my Michael Badgley moment. Well, the next one I have, guys, is a lot easier. In better news, which quarterback has the fastest average time from snap to throw this season?
So Jenny's in victory formation right now. By the way. I should know this because I just edited the Tom Brady sports person story, and that was one of the stats that our good friend Reed Foster had sent, and I was verifying it. So I was just looking at that list the other day, and it's not Tom Brady, although he is down there this year. Or
it's
got
to be by means of survival. It has to be Ben Roethlisberger, right?
It's either Ben or it's Tua.
Yeah.
I think you are correct in saying Ben, though.
I just think he has no choice, right?
Yeah.
And there's so many checkdowns to Najee Harris, right? And the Panthers haven't had, and Christian McCaffrey hasn't been healthy enough. Alvin Kamara hasn't been healthy enough, so you can't like log any of those guys in there. I think it's got to be Ben Roethlisberger, right?
Yeah, let's go Ben Roethlisberger.
That is correct. Yes. 2.41 seconds, but Tua is second, 2.5, and Brady is third, 2.51. Nice work, team. All right, on to the final question. I really enjoy this one. This is a good stat, and the answer is interesting. Which running back has faced the highest percentage of fronts with at least 8 men in the box?
Okay, highest percentage. So it could be a guy who missed some time due to injury. I don't think it's Derrick Henry, but it could be Derrick Henry.
Right, like could it be like Christian McCaffrey, right?
Yeah, yeah. So Connor, I think I'd go Nick Chubb, the way teams are defending the Browns this year.
I would do that, or I would do Aaron Jones / whoever you want to say the 49ers lead guy is / Derrick Henry, because we've seen the outside zone teams get so much better defended this year and really get hammered because the running game was kind of their lifeblood, you know. Or even you couldn't do Daryl Henderson because there's no way you couldn't run an 8-man box against them. But
hang on, how it's phrased, what player or what running back?
Running back. It's a running back.
Oh, okay. It's a running back. I was wondering, is it like Debo Samuel because he motions into the backfield and then they bring an extra guy into the box, defensive back? But apparently I have overthought this.
We already had my Michael Badgley moment, as you said, so there aren't two.
Part of me wants to say Christian McCaffrey, if only because with Derrick Henry, you have learned to respect Tannehill. There are some options there. With a Sam Darnold / Christian McCaffrey thing, you kind of knew what was happening there, right? And you sort of were like, forget this guy. We're just gonna take out that guy.
Yes. I like that. I will keep Nick Chubb in my pocket, and I will keep Antonio Gibson is sort of sticking out to me a little bit the way Washington plays. But I like McCaffrey at the start. Let's go Christian McCaffrey.
Christian McCaffrey is not correct, but it's a great guess. He is third on the list with 37%.
Nick Chubb was my first instinct here. They also play a ton of tight ends, so you're already bringing people down there. And as we saw last time they were out there, teams are apparently just putting rush linebackers on their tight ends and doing just fine. So yeah, I'd like to say Nick Chubb here, Connor.
Okay, let's do it.
Nick Chubb is not correct. He is not in the top 10.
Oh, ooh, man.
I mean, we're putting a lot of faith in NFL Next Gen stats here, but this is what I'm reading off of, so.
Who? Do the 49ers have a lead enough ball carrier to be entered into this? I mean, they run the ball all the time. Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't necessarily present as a threat as a passer. You had the Trey Lance stuff, like, when you were putting him in earlier in the year. Does, like, an Elijah Mitchell.
Yeah. Eli Mitchell, Antonio Gibson, or do we bring it all the way back to the Patriots and it's like Damian Harris? Because, again, there's, you know, Nelson Aguilar. I don't know, outside of him, I don't know who else really is threatening the top of a defense. As far as what they have there.
Patriots is a good guess. And considering sample size, here's an interesting thing to throw at you, right? Could the Bills game have skewed it towards someone like... Because you're going with percentages, right? Could the Bills game have skewed it towards... A not Damian Harris Patriots running back. You know what I'm saying?
Like Ramondre Stevenson.
Like, could it be Ramondre Stevenson? Because in that game, he faced 100% of loaded boxes. And then what if throughout the year he had like a 30, a 30, a 30, and then that brings his total up to like, you know, whatever. I'm not going to even try to do math on the podcast, but maybe it's a lot. I don't know. Could that be, you know,
His other high workload game was that blowout of the Browns, where you figure the Browns probably loaded up a little bit. I think I'm with you. I think I like Ramondre Stevenson here.
Yes, correct. Yes. Great work. And that's why I picked it too, because it brought it back to the Patriots Bills game, which is where we started the episode. But yes, 41% for Ramondre Stevenson. I will say, though, Connor, Elijah Mitchell is right behind him at 40%. So those are the top three. And then in fourth place was Derrick Henry. But yeah, 41% is pretty crazy. And I think you're exactly right. I haven't looked at the breakdown, but it has to have been skewed. And his workload was higher in that game because Harris didn't play the whole time.
Boy, what was Nick Chubb?
Nick Chubb was in the 20s.
Wow.
27%. Both he and Kareem Hunt were back to back.
Yeah. I'm going to email Wink Martindale and tell him. I finally figured out a way to stop the Browns, who are averaging 11 points a game this year.
Got it. That was a good one.
I enjoyed that one, right? I thought that was a little bit outside the box, but also, you guys. I knew you could get there. You got there.
So Jenny runs up the Jenny runs up the score at the end here.
Valdez Scantling.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. 8-9-9. I don't know.
Wow.
Connor get. I don't know. You got like a half. You got like a half a point. Personal best.
As long as it's not a shutout, you know?
I was going to say, it's a personal best.
I kicked that Joe Judge field goal at the end.
The MMQB NFL podcast is Jenny Vrentis, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Our senior podcast producer is Dan Bloom. Mark Mravik is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts. And once you do, please leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.